Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I have the delight to be with Robert Bly. I didn't know anything at all about a guzzle when I picked up, because your fine publisher sent to me, my sentence was A Thousand Years of Joy, which the signature poem you have just read to us. And I set to reading them, and I had to puzzle this out completely unknown. And I found it aggravating and irritating, and it engaged me thereby. And so I made up a little story to myself. I said, all right, Paula, he's doing this for a reason. Maybe it's a political reason. This is good. He's bringing the Muslim tradition into the English-speaking world. This is good. He's a political animal. I am too. This is good. And then I made up this story that, think of it as, Paula, a necklace. Perhaps that's what he's trying to do for me. And that each stanza is a little pearl or decoration or something, and when taken together, they make one necklace that will have its own beauty. Never mind what the story was, you forced me to go figure out a way to make sense of it. And that drew me in ways that if you don't work at it, you don't get anything out of it. Isn't there something to that?
No, I think it's a fine metaphor. And I've written free verse for years, so I don't want to, knock it. But free verse is a little like little beads strung on the end of a string, which then falls to the ground, and the little beads roll all over the place.
was not the image I had in mind, is it?
So the image of a necklace around your neck is very good. I like that.
Just one more thing on the form itself. I was quite captivated by the fact that often you spoke to yourself at the end of it. And before you said this was part of the form, I thought, well, that's interesting. He keeps saying, Robert. And I kept thinking, he's inviting me into his own conversation here. How does that work in the form, this Robert?
Well, it's people don't know what to think about that. It's believed that in the beginning, well, we have to know one thing. All the guzzles were sung. This is a form that was sung. So the poet would write it, or the woman would write it alone in her room, but it would end up at a party in India, a poetry party in India, and someone would stand up and sing it to a certain tune, because the meter would indicate the possibility of a tune. And then the thought is that the only claim the poet had on it would be to put his or her name in the last stanza. Otherwise, it's gone. You'll never see it again. Because this is not being published. There are no books here we're describing. This is a singing society. So I think that's right. And then in the course of it, as it went on, people began to realize how lovely it is. Rumi says this at the very end. He says a lot of things, and at the end, Rumi says, or Hafez goes on and he says something. All of this is true about a lot of things, but, don't really believe that Hafez understands all these things. And so then comes in the possibility that two separate voices come in, one voice who writes the poem, and the other one may be more intelligent, who listens to the whole poem and then says something. And one of the poems, I had said a lot of things. And then the last sentence says, Robert, some of these images are pretty good. It's probably as good as anyone can do who is still living in the old inn of desire. Well, as James Hillman would say, that's where we live. And I thought of calling the book The Old Inn of Desire, but I decided it was a little... No.
It's interesting to watch you go back to a form that is 1,000 years old. I was talking to somebody last night at the party in your honor about the current political condition, and I said, you got to understand, these folks have not accepted the Magna Carta. The problem for, I think, modern American culture, and I think for lots of modern cultures, is we have no sense of history. We've lost contact with all that has gone before, and we have lost access. We've given away access to the wisdom and knowledge and the mistakes and all the things that went before, long before. Our sense of history goes back 30 minutes. Whatever the nightly news presents is what happened yesterday. But there is just stunning richness, and we ignore that. And one of the lovely things about your reaching way back into these various traditions, as well as into other outside traditions from an American perspective, going back in time, is you bring those things forward in ways that enrich our experience.
Well, that's right, and I was a little surprised myself when this development came, because I said to myself, you know, my original work was with nature, but this is about culture.
The Ghazals.
They're about culture.
Mm-hmm.
The figures that have been in culture, Descartes appears there, Madame Bovary, and people who don't know any of that don't know what they're doing. Well, then go and read the books. But I think that's very important, because our culture is just as great as nature, and European culture has a fantastic richness to it. And the Muslims are well aware of the enormous richness of their culture, and they would never allow that to be omitted by their poets. And so I think I feel good about that. Here's one of the little poems begins, I don't know, Adam agreed the ocean would be the home of salt.
Mm-hmm.
All of those old things that have happened so many years ago. Imagination is the door to the raven's house, so we are already blessed. The one nail that fell from the shoe lit the way for Newton to get home from the fair. Oh, that's wild. I mean, I don't know where that came from. But the one nail that fell from the shoe, that'd be an old European thing, and the person lit the way for Newton to get home from the fair. Well, at least Newton is in there, you know?
And the fair.
And the fair is in there. And then the fifth stanza said, St. John of the Cross heard an Arab love poem through the bars and began his poem. And that's true. He heard a little love poem sung in Arab, and he began his great poem. St. John of the Cross heard an Arab love poem through the bars and began his poem. In Nevada, it was often the falling horse who discovered the mine. The horse who fell through a hole. You understood that?
Mm-hmm.
In Nevada, it was often the falling horse who discovered the mine. So that way I get Nevada and St. John of the Cross in the same stanza.
Do you work at that? Or do
yes! Yes! Oh, it just flows naturally.
I think it was Thomas Lux who said, anybody who thinks it flows naturally has never tried to write a good poem.
Walking home, we become distracted whenever we pass apple orchards. Well, that's nice, because there's so much is said about Apple and Eve and stuff like that. Walking home, we become distracted whenever we pass apple orchards. We are still eating fruit left on the ground the night Adam was born. Well, boom, suddenly it takes you way back. So anyway, I just enjoyed this. People who adore literature often say that fall is the best of all seasons. Erasmus loved Latin, heavy seas, masts breaking, ships going down.
And perhaps someone will go back and figure out who Erasmus
yes,
is
exactly.
By virtue of that.
Yeah. There's a current report that some paleoanthropologist has found evidence of a 1.7 million-year-old hominid ancestor of us who was well over 40 years old, and the evidence is just overwhelming, at least from their perspective, that the people... The families, the tribe, were taking care of this person.
And over 40 was ancient in Paleolithic time.
1.7 million years ago. And I was reading the story and reading your work. And you don't typically reach back quite that far. But again, the roots of who and what we are go way, way, way back, pre-human even. And we ignore that at our peril, don't
yeah.
we?
Mm-hmm. I more and more love the old Gnostic speculations, which are related to the time of early Christianity. But, you know, their tradition is that certain archons owned this planet.
Icons?
And it was archons, A-R-C-H-O-N. It's a dark word. And these are dark spiritual beings owned this planet. And they still own it. And so, therefore, these wars that are coming along are not only the mistakes of various politicians, such as George W. Bush, but they are evidence that huge spiritual forces are involved in our planet who are not particularly fond of human beings. And as you get older, I think you have more of a sense of that. And ominous things are taking place.
Have they always?
Yes.
So this isn't a new event.
Not at all. The Roman Empire, when Jesus came along, the darkness was so deep that people were able to believe again about the archons.
Would you read Call and Answer?
Yes.
Because it seems to me that that speaks very much.
You just happen to have a copy of Call and Answer open and at the ready.
Call and Answer, August 2002. I was much upset by the very few voices that came protesting the war at the time of the invasion of Iraq. Tell me why it is we don't lift our voices these days and cry over what is happening. Have you noticed the plans are made for Iraq and the ice cap is melting? I say to myself, go on, cry. What's the sense of being an adult and having no voice? Cry out. See who will answer. This is Call and Answer. We will have to call especially loud to reach our angels, who are hard of hearing. They are hiding in the jugs of silence filled during our wars. Have we agreed to so many wars that we can't escape from silence? If we don't lift our voices, we allow others, who are ourselves, to rob the house. Have we agreed to so many wars that we can't escape from silence? There's that feeling, isn't it? If we don't lift our voices, we allow others, who are ourselves, to rob the house. Then I do the fifth stanza. How come we listen to the great criers? Neruda, Akhmatova, Thoreau, Frederick Douglass. And now we're silent as sparrows in the little bushes? Very bad pun. Now we're silent as sparrows in the little bushes. Some masters say our life only lasts 7 days. Where are we in the week? Is it Thursday yet? Hurry, cry now. Soon Sunday night will come. And Sunday night came, the night we bombed Baghdad.
This is Robert Bly. Be with us when we return in a moment.